Have you ever wondered how to make sense out of your messy life or how to live in peace in the middle of a stressful world? My name is Jamie Norton, and I want to welcome you to the Making Peace and Beyond podcast. In almost 50 years as a counselor, I have seen a lot of life happen, and this podcast is going to cover all of it. So thanks for joining us while we explore life's struggles and how to live in the peace, joy, and freedom that Christ died to give us. This is Valerie O'Brien. She is an amazing young woman that I met who has a nonprofit called Aspen. And the reason that I ask you here, Valerie, is that teenagers today are living in such a different world than most of us as adults ever had, and we don't understand, and we don't know how to communicate very well. And that goes for teachers and parents and youth leaders, and just trying to figure out how do we bridge the gap between the world that we grew up in and lived in as teenagers and the world that you're seeing now as a youth leader, and what you're doing with Aspen to really find out what is it that teenagers today are thinking, are wondering about, are asking. Yes. And so I would just welcome you here
and ask you
to tell us a little bit about Aspen.
Thank you so much. So much. Oh my goodness. I was going to say, I'm 37, and teenagers are so different even than I was when I was a teenager. Even the world is changing so fast. And I do feel like parents and youth workers and teachers, they all are like, what in the world is going on with this next generation? And then those of us that know Jesus and know the hope of Jesus are looking at these teenagers and saying, how in the world, like, how do we meet them? How do we meet them with the hope that we know is timeless? We know goes over all generations, all cultures, all people. How do we speak the truth of Jesus to them? So that's just become like one of my major passions. So I've been doing youth ministry for about 15 years. And I was in a local church for about 12 of those. And I love that. I love local church ministry. I love working with families and students. And then I was doing coaching of youth workers. Because youth ministry is kind of like dog years. So even though I was only 33 years old, they're like, oh, you've been doing this so long. You're 100 years old for doing youth ministry. Come and coach. So I was doing coaching, and I just would hear exactly what you just talked about over and over and over again from godly people, great youth workers, great, amazing parents just saying, what is going on with these teenagers and what do we do? And I just took that before the Lord also. And that's kind of where Aspen, just the idea and the vision and just my heart for Aspen came from. So
you were doing training all over the world, right? I mean,
We were working a lot nationally, but also we were part of a big network of youth workers all over the world. And that was just an amazing experience. Amazing. And one of the things that's really shocking right now in the world that we live is youth culture is pretty homogenous now. Like any young person that has a smartphone is watching a lot of the same content. So it was fascinating. So I would sit with these youth workers that were working in Africa, that were working in Nepal, hearing from them and them saying, you know, oh, our kids are on TikTok and they're on social media. They're always on their phones. They have so many things and they don't pay attention. How do we reach this? And so it was just interesting to see that also and say, oh no, this isn't just like a US problem. Just because of globalization, a lot of these teenagers are in the same place all over the world. No matter what their culture of origin is, there's a really interesting moment where we're seeing youth culture is really united right now. Like there's a lot of similarities that teenagers experience all over the world. So
they have
really
united to baffle every adult in the world. I mean, that's what you're saying.
And that also goes over culture, generation.
So tell
equally
me how
Aspen confusing
is.
To all. Equal opportunity confusion.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, so Aspen and what we do. I saw this kind of problem, these great youth leaders struggling with what do we do with the next generation. I met with this one leader. I had this amazing interview with her where she was telling me, you know, all the great stuff their church is doing and their ministry and small groups and all of it, led by seminary students, all of these things. And the very end, and I was sitting there as a coach going like, I don't even know how I'm going to coach this young woman because I'm going to just say, God bless you, keep going. And at the very end, I just said, hey, is there anything else that you want to mention? And she goes, yeah, can you teach us how to reach high school students? And just, you know, I had to control my face, you know, but she just kind of was saying, we feel like we're doing all the right things, but the message isn't resonating with these kids. What do we do? And then I also was following a lot of the work out of Barna, who does a lot of research about the church and the state of the church in America, and also Fuller Youth Institute out in California. And Kara Powell, who's the head of that, said that when she interviews students, she hears all the time some sort of sentiment of, I wish the church would answer the questions I'm actually asking. And so I said, oh man, we're experiencing this gap on both sides. The students, they want their questions answered. And the adults are like, oh my goodness, how do we reach these kids? And so the vision of Aspen is to really try to help bridge that gap between adults and parents and people that love Jesus and are trying to reach the next generation. So we do two primary things. We're doing this project called 10,000 Questions. We're trying to gather 10,000 questions that young people have about God, faith, and life in their own words. And it has just been a more beautiful project than I even would have imagined to see these kids write their questions in their own handwriting and sometimes leave them on the table, sometimes want to hand deliver them to me. It's really amazing to get to steward and hear these kids' questions. And then we're answering them, which I can talk about. And then also we're doing work with parents and youth workers and grandparents and teachers and that type of thing about how do we engage the hard questions of students in this generation that resonates with their hearts. How do we get that message through to them? So those are two things we're doing. We're collecting questions from students. We're doing training with adults and just trying to help bring those two worlds together.
So the most common questions that I hear from young people?
Yeah.
Would be, do you have a few that you say? Because I know you've collected how many questions already?
We've collected 2,500.
All right.
We've collected 2,500 already. And it's really amazing because people are like, oh, you're only going to need to gather 200 and then you'll hear all repeats. I'm telling you, everywhere I go, kids ask questions I've never heard before. And so it's just so fun. But I would say, I was teasing someone the other day that the main two categories are sex and dinosaurs. So if you know the answers to those two, you can basically, you know, just wow any high school kid. But
tell you sex, but I don't know a whole lot about dinosaurs.
I know.
Although I am one. I mean, I feel like one. I don't have a clue about what's going on right now. I think I'm close to extinct.
You are very in touch, Jamie. I am always impressed with that with you. Not a dinosaur at all. The sexuality question, that shouldn't surprise any of us, right? You know, like if we've been present in the world for the last 10, 15 years, you know that there's been so much change, even just in our culture and the conversation about sexuality. So lots of questions about sex in every possible way you can imagine it. And then also, I'm half joking about the dinosaurs questions. There have been a lot of questions about dinosaurs, which I just think is so funny. They're kind of having their own little moment right now. And I'm in search of somebody to answer them. I'm like, goodness sake, I don't know the answers to these. So I'm in search of a Christian paleontologist. If anyone out there knows one, send them my way.
Tell them until they can find the answers out about dinosaurs and not ready for sex.
Yeah, exactly. Once you get that one covered, then we'll get to the hard ones. But the other question, and again, this isn't, there's nothing new under the sun, right? So people are always asking the same questions people have always asked. And I would say a ton of the questions that I receive from students are about pain and are about suffering and are somehow in that category of what do we do with our hurt? What do we do with our pain? Where does that come from? And that question shows itself, again, as it has in so many, you know, we've all asked these questions. This is not a new question, but I've gotten questions, you know, as serious as about addiction. Why did God take my sibling away? All sorts of things.
You know, I think when you boil it down to the two major categories, those are questions that adults are not honest about.
Yes.
We aren't open about.
Yes.
I think too often we've built a church culture that's happy all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we don't do well with pain and grief, and and life is going to hurt, and we have to learn to do hard better, because it's going to be hard. It's going to you're not going to be happy all the time, and we've been very much ignorant about sex, even as adults. And you know, the message in the church when I grew up was like, sex is nasty, bad, dirty, save it for the one you love. And that was really a mixed up answer.
That's kind of a confusing, like,
That didn't make any sense to me.
I didn't
listen to that, but it was like.
But that's what they were saying.
That's what they were saying.
Yeah, but yeah, it's true.
But it was just kind of a, I think one of the things that makes it hard to connect with young people is we're not authentic.
I mean,
adults, we tend to, I think, treat young people as projects, you know, that we're going to do something to you. We're not going to hear you. We're going to design programs for you, and we're going to do things to you, but we're not going to really hear your heart. We're not going to be honest with our answers. And, you know, I mean, my whole understanding right now is that truth and love go together, and God is truth and God is love, and when we aren't honest, when we don't tell the truth, then it's not loving. But in the church, we have thought, because I love you, I'm not going to tell you the truth.
Right.
You know,
right.
And to really look at, how do I do that? And where do you think that disconnect comes in? Is that kind of what you're seeing, that we don't even know who we are as adults, much less able to—
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
You know, you know, I was saying in another podcast that one of the, one of the things that— Because my history is so crazy. If you've listened to the other podcast, you guys out there, then you already know that my history is pretty crazy. But, you know, one of the things that I feel really, really good about is that my daughter speaks a lot, and that she can get on a stage and be free to tell her story, including my craziness, because she doesn't have to protect my story, because I already am honest about my story.
Yeah.
And to be able to put that out there and to say, you know, we don't have to walk in guilt and shame. Jesus went to a whole lot of trouble to take guilt and shame away from us.
Yeah.
And we continue to act as if that's not true. We don't live in the freedom and the joy that Jesus died to give us. And so if we're not being honest about ourselves and really saying that, then our children can't tell their story, which is the biggest reason that people, even teenagers, don't get help, don't ask for help, because they're protecting somebody else's story. They're protecting a parent's story. And they feel like they're betraying that parent if they say what's true.
Yes, absolutely.
And that is really, really, really sad. So how are you seeing that come out?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's, like I said, I worked in church youth ministry for a lot of years. And there were certain students that I would just like, long for the day when they turned 18 or went away to college, because I was like, okay, then you could start getting help. Then you could go to counseling. You don't have to wait for, you know, your parent to file all of the paperwork and pay for it and everything. You can just go. But I do think, you know, that is always a complicated relationship between a parent and a child, especially in a hard situation like that. And I think the pressure that a kid can feel when there is so much angst at home, but they feel like they need to be the protector of their parent or their family or their reputation, is really, it's very real. And I understand, you know, I know that parents, you know, it's not like, oh, as soon as the day you get everything figured out yourself, then you have a child. If only it worked that way, that all the, everybody is a work in progress with the Lord, with our own issues, with our own stories, the way that the Lord is redeeming us never stops. And yet then also I feel for parents who have this little life in their house too, and they're trying to work it out together. But I think you're so right on that. I think a parent has to be settled enough with themselves and find some answers to their own questions, and then be able to model that to their children is really powerful. It's really, really powerful. And I think is definitely a step of transformation for that child also.
I often wonder about the way we have focused on making children happy, you know, that that they become entitled to not have to learn certain skills. You know, we don't say, yeah. Okay, you're three now, you should be making your bed and picking up your toys. And because they could.
Right, you know, right. I
mean, we tend to not teach them that they have to live as part of a community to contribute to, and within that, learn how to solve conflict, learn how to solve problems, learn how to talk things through, not to get angry, blow up, or avoid. Because in the family I grew up in, we had such a strong no-talk rule that if you broke one of the family authorized prohibited truths, then you know, I mean, life didn't go well for you. I mean, you would get yelled at, you would get silent treatment, you would get punished. And, you know, so we learned really early not to talk about things, not to solve problems, to just stuff feelings, to stuff truth. And it would feel like betraying that person. Mm-hmm. I mean, and when you're little, you can't like challenge a whole lot. I mean, you can't just pack your little suitcase and say, I think you're a pretty lousy parent. I'm going to move down the street and live with the Joneses, you know.
Sometimes you try. You know, you make it a cute few houses down.
You get out the door and you think, oops.
Oh, no, I'm hungry. Yeah.
This isn't going to work well.
Right.
So, but I think we grow into learning some really unhealthy relational patterns and not learning things like solving problems and dealing, managing anger and managing fear. And how do you really surrender to Christ? How do you really trust Christ's provision for you? And I don't know.
Yeah. I was going to say, I remember thinking probably 10, 15 years ago now, as I was even working with students then, that, you know, the coping skills of teenagers is really low. You know, even again, I'm 37, even, you know, the stuff that my parents would, you know, have a conversation with and expect it to be over and expect it to move on, you know, like something hard that happened at school. Okay, we talked through it and go do your thing. Go live your life. Go have dinner. Go play outside. Would sometimes paralyze kids for a long period of time. I've actually even talked to some college professors about this too, and them saying, I had a really insightful conversation with a professor probably about 2 years ago that was like, oh, Val, we've kind of had to change some of our expectations for these students because sometimes, you know, they won't be able to come to class for a couple of days. And it's not just, you know, one student that's really having a hard time, but it's a large group of them. And what do we do? How do we care for these kids? And I think a lot of us as adults, you know, we'll look at that and be like, these kids need to toughen up. What is wrong with them? Like,
I think we have come to a point where we are treating ourselves, and I think mental health has done this, frankly.
I think mental health has not been
a benefit in a lot of ways. But I do think that we have taught ourselves that life is supposed to be a pink fluff cotton candy.
Yeah.
And if it happens to you, then you should, it's traumatized and you should be wounded forever. And, if somebody says something to you, then you should be devastated and, you know, forever instead of being able to talk about it and deal with it and move away from it and realize that's not about me, that's about them, you know. Because I mean, in my day, kids were still mean. I mean, kids still said nasty things. I remember all kinds of things that I was called and all things kinds of things that I called others. You know? I was not a nice kid. But to really look at how do you live life on life's terms and deal with life, the hard part of life.
Yes,
and
yes.
I don't think we have done a very good job of that.
Right. And I always think about just the example of Jesus and how I just read this again the other day. I think about it all the time. Mm-hmm. How it said that he looked out on the crowd and he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. And said he was moved towards compassion for them. And, you know, a lot of times I think when we can just be frustrated as parents, as youth workers, as whatever, and just be like, what? Toughen up. What are these kids? to look at the example of Jesus and say, how do we look out at these kids at this generation and have such compassion on them? Because is there a generation that's been more harassed than this mm-hmm. generation, and helpless. The things, even COVID and some of the real hardship that's brought to a lot of students. I think that should stir in us this heart of compassion towards them and say, okay, how then do we help them? Because these kids, they really are living in an unprecedented time. Like, they are living in the middle of an earthquake. Like, if mm-hmm. they're living like in the fault line and things are still shaking. And we know that from cell phones and technology and social media. I just think in some ways that stuff, we're starting to get to some just like cultural changes in how we think about those things from the anxious generation and that type of thing. But I think even with social media, we're going to look back like we did about kids like rolling around in the backseat of cars without seatbelts on and just think like, what were we thinking? Giving these kids unfettered access to the internet like this, like of what did we think was going to happen?
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, these kids are the guinea pigs of that. And I think we as adults and as people that deeply care for the formation as human beings, but then especially their spiritual formation, need to say, okay, how do we bring back the way of Jesus? How do we help infuse those values into these kids? And I just think it's really, you know, it's an amazing thing. I have a whole nerd lecture on this that we do not have time to get into, but one day. But about really, there's such a huge cultural shift going on right now that a lot of scholars will say that the difference even between millennials, my generation, and Gen Z, there's such a wide gap there that's the widest gap. That it's mm-hmm. actually more of a true cultural gap.
That's when the cell phone, that's generational when the gap. Video games got really, really popular. It was right in that little period of time.
I was going to say, yes. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, you know, when I left for college, when I was in high school, I went to a high school in a different area code, and I had one of those prepaid phone cards. So if I needed to call home, I could use my phone card and the payphone. And I'm like, I'm not 100 years old. I'm 37. I went to high school with a phone card. I had a flip phone when I went to college. Like the amount of just, and we know this, right? We've all lived this, the amount of technology and the amount of input that has come in to students.
Yeah.
That's what I even say about being harassed.
I came from having to call a switchboard and get plugged in to four numbers. I can still remember all my friends in four numbers. And
so
mine was 3138. and it was, but to where we are now, and it's just mind-boggling. My first cell phone, I was 49 years old, you know, and our first television was when I was 11. So, I mean, there's just so much change, but to really look at how overwhelming that is, and the thing that has been lost is the ability to be quiet and to ponder.
Yes.
You know, and eyeball-to-eyeball relationships.
Correct.
I mean, I think those are two real big problems that have happened in terms of, I mean, we know that if there is chaos in your family and chaos in your life, that there's some things that mitigate that, like someplace you can rest and be safe and talk, someplace you can eating together, having family rituals that you adhere to.
Yeah.
I mean, things that really can help a person have some form of feeling of groundedness, you know, that and to have people come alongside and not to lecture and tell you how to do stuff, but to listen. Mm-hmm. I mean, people want to be heard and kids want to be heard.
Yes.
You know.
Oh, they do.
And they don't want to be somebody's project.
No.
They know it if they're your project.
Yes. Oh, they'll sniff it out.
They're smart.
They will sniff it out in a second. They, you know, it's so interesting to me that Gen Z and Gen Alpha, they talk so much about their desire for authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think they've been marketed to. They've got their phones in their hand. And I just think that's so telling, but their heart is longing for authenticity and for truth. Yes.
Because yeah, authenticity and truth are the same thing.
Yes. Yeah.
And just to be who God created them to be, to be a person who can have all these weird feelings. Mm-hmm. I mean, going through adolescence is hard. I mean, the developmental issues in adolescence, you know, and you know, are, you know, your brain is changing and all of a sudden you can see all these global things and mm-hmm. and the whole idea of where your focus is, focusing away from your parents and focusing into how do I fit into my peer group. And and then the meanness of today, you know, that can be harrowing. I mean, it can be really, really hard. Mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest mistakes parents make is they will see a child pulling away as being rebellion when the actual developmental task is individuation. They have to leave you in order to be successful. They have to begin to make their own decisions.
Right.
And so to be able to say, okay, you know, it's not rebellion, it's natural growth, because your job as a parent is to teach your child to live in a world that does not care about them without you.
You know? Right? Yes.
And people don't like it when you say
I was going to say, in a world that doesn't like them without you. I know. What a, we should put that as signs when they take their babies home from the hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a harsh but good reality. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if that doesn't happen, we have a lot of failure to launch right now going on.
Yes.
And, you know, but I think to really say, how do you do that? You know, you help them to know that they're loved and they're worth it and they have stuff to offer.
Yeah.
And you also help them to know Jesus, because Jesus goes out the door with you.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And he will be with you all the time.
Yeah.
Even when we're not.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to be okay if they do that. I mean, your child is not your possession. They're not your trophy. They're not anything else. They're individuals that are growing up to live their own life separate from yours.
Yeah. I just think, that identity piece is so huge for all of us at every stage of our life.
Yes.
You know, as adults, we look for our identity still in our relationships and our possessions and our jobs, you know, and teenagers are just little raw. They're just little raw adults. They're just, you know, I had a youth pastor once I worked with who said, like, teenagers are raw adults. They're just less, they have the same problems. They're just less skilled at hiding it. And I'm like, and that's why I love them. And that's why I love these kids. but, you know, they're looking for their identity. And I think one of the things that is stressful to these kids is the message and culture that they can choose whatever identity they want. And that, you know, that feel, it's one of those classic things that feels like it should bring freedom, but it really brings bondage and it brings stress. And again, we need that balance, right? Of like being able to express who we are, but also having somebody tell us, no, this is who you are. And that's what God tells us. Like, God gives us that identity, tells us that we are precious to him. We're made in the image of God. We're made for a purpose. That even though we're broken and sinful, that our life can be redeemed by the power of Jesus. And then I also think that parents play such an integral role in that, in affirming a child and helping them understand who they are, giving them that sense of security, giving them that sense of identity, and letting them blossom into it. Yeah.
I say sometimes, but I think parents are responsible for transmitting God's love.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing like having someone light up and you're the twinkle in their eye.
Yeah.
When you walk in the room, they say, wow, I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
You're special.
Yeah.
What do you think? How are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, and to be able to be recognized as a human being. But, you know, I think joy is just the experience of God smiling at us with a twinkle in his eye.
Yes.
He sees us. We're his kids in the sandbox, you know, I mean, and when he loves us and he wants us to love each other that way. And when we transmit joy by lighting up when people, I know for me, I mean, I'm 81 years old and it does. And when somebody lights up when I walk in the room, I love it.
Right.
And it makes me feel good.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to be that light, you know, but I think if children don't get that, then we as a church have the responsibility of being that.
Yes.
You know, for them.
Yeah.
And helping them to know you are an important image of God. You are created. you know, in His image, and He loves you and you are loved, and help Him to experience that. Because I think sometimes we get too into program and scripture and mechanical stuff rather than, you know, just giving you the experience of being in a loving relationship, of being in, and we know when somebody cares. So I don't think we can program that away.
No.
You know?
it's so true. And I know we've talked a lot about parenting, but you're so right, is that, you know, as youth workers, as teachers, as grandparents, as aunts, as neighbors, whoever it is, we get the opportunity to do that to kids. And even as a part of the developmental process, like you're talking about, which I'm no expert at this. I'm no, most of what I've learned has been hard knocks. this is not my degrees. This is my experience. But as a part of that pulling away process, that individualizing process of that a kid goes through, especially as teenagers, I think that is where the body of Christ can play such a pivotal role in those young people. And it's just one of the things, like, even as we do training now, like with parents, but also youth workers and stuff like that, it's like, no, how do we create a whole network of godly people who are equipped and like know how to handle a serious conversation with a teenager and know how to engage them and listen to them and hear their heart and answer in a way that is showing them the goodness of Jesus, and that we need a whole group of us to do that. We can't put all the pressure on parents. We can't put all the pressure on mom and dad. And it's a joy. It's a joy to get to do that as a part of the body of Christ. But it's a full court press, man. It's not up to the youth pastor. It's not up to mom and dad. If we are going to have those conversations and see kids just flourish and be just the agents of transformation and for both in their own life and in the world around them, it takes 1,000 conversations. It takes a full court for these young people. And so
to know that they have, God has given each person gifts to give.
And
there was a book a long time ago about the price of privilege and how kids who are given everything often don't develop well because they're not allowed to give anything.
Yes, I've seen that.
And when we give things, when we can contribute, is when we really feel valuable and worthwhile. Like, I can be a part of this because I have something to offer. And I think that kids have so much to offer.
Yes.
And sometimes we don't recognize that.
And every member of the body of Christ has something to offer.
That's right.
And I just think, you know, I had a teacher when I was in eighth grade, and she was nearing retirement. She was an older lady. She was not cool. She didn't know the lingo. She didn't have like her cool outfit. She never Nikes on. But she loved students, and she loved me, like, in a way that really transformed me. And I just think, you know, a lot of times, even in youth ministry, people think like, oh, that's for the people in their 20s. That's for them. But I'm like, we need every age of people. We need fill-in grandmothers. We need fill-in grandfathers. We need fill-in aunts and uncles. And we need everybody, because all of those play really special, unique roles, can speak into a young person in a really unique and beautiful way. And I think there's so much, too, that our young people can continue to teach us. And that's not just a platitude of like, oh, I learned just as much from them as I, you know, as they learned from me. You know, it's not. It's real.
If you don't, you are real. Doing what you need to. You know,
yeah.
I think another thing to just caution too, when a child has been hurt, a teenager has been hurt or abandoned or betrayed or abused, then often they will build up a shell that wants to push love away because they feel ashamed, they feel guilty. And so, you know, sometimes people are impatient with that.
Yeah.
You know, they don't realize that this child does not feel safe, and their experience of the world has been totally unsafe. And so to be able to say, you know, I'm just going to sit with you for a while. I'm going to love you. I'm just going to stand right here and love you until you can maybe feel it.
Because
the most frightening thing in the world is if your room is really dark and messy and somebody turns on a light, then you see the mess. Mm-hmm. And then it's really easy to want to turn the light out mm-hmm. rather than clean the mess up, you know, because you don't know about hope. You don't know about there's a way back. You don't know, you know, how to get here. And sometimes it just takes a lot of patience and realizing it isn't about you. It's about what that child has experienced and been through. And mm-hmm. when I think sometimes we tend to favor the easy ones, you know, the ones that are hoopy-doo, but the ones that are really hard or messing up or not making it tend to get pushed to the side or ostracized or get out or, you know, they, and not just by leaders, but also by other kids, you know, you don't fit into our little clique, you know? And so, I mean, just, I think a lot needs to be done around, you know, how do we embrace kids that are hurting long enough for them to feel the love, you know, and even though they're going to push you away and be terrible.
and it be not fun some days. Listen, I can paint a beautiful picture of youth ministry because it's my heart. But there are days, truly, I would get in my car after youth group and I'd be like, I'm wasting my life. And the Lord would be like, okay, well, you got a couple minutes in the car to think that, and then I'm going to snap you out of it. But it's hard. It is really hard. And I think, just practically speaking, I think that looks a lot like, maybe it looks like greeting a teenager, greeting a child who doesn't seem to even care that you exist, barely lifts their head in response, but knowing their name and saying hello to them every time you see them. And it's those things that like seem so silly to us. And it's so easy for us, even for me, that, like hearing you talk is still convicting to me because there are still hard kids in my life that I want to be like, they don't care. They don't care. I'm over it.
Shove you up against the wall in a minute.
Exactly.
But no.
Or just like, they're so disrespectful. You know, and it's easy. I love kids. It's easy for me to get there too. But I think what you're saying is like a way that we can show the patience of Jesus that he has shown to us. The kindness of it, just the simple truths that like, they really are transformative to a kid over the long haul. You know, you do hear those stories that are like, you know, I really want to invite so-and-so to my college graduation because, I heard a story recently of someone who got invited to a wedding of a student that they knew in high school. They're like, I didn't even think I was that close to them.
Yeah.
They invited me to their wedding because they were like, they were the only person who I knew really loved me. Beautiful. We don't know.
I spent some time in an unwed mother's home when I was a teenager, and we had these women from church that came in and would do crafts, and they would it was almost like a checklist. You could tell they really didn't care about us particularly. They were doing a program for us, and I appreciate that, but it fell flat on us. I didn't like it when they came. We always try to get out of it. But who I remember is a corner cook named Joyce. I can see her today. I was 16 years old. I can see her today. Mm. She would just give me a piece of Boston cream pie and talk to me like a person, just like an equal human being. And it was very, very healing. Mm. And, you know, of all the people that were there, because I had some special things, I had counsel, I had all this, but the one who reached my heart was a woman who cared and loved me and saw me as equal to herself.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's important.
Yeah.
I am so excited about what you're doing with all your stuff.
Thank you, Jamie. Thank you.
And I'm just looking forward to hearing about what you're doing down the road. I know you're already traveling all over the place doing things for people, and Aspen is really taking off, and I'm so happy for you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Even as you're telling that story, I'm just reminded, like, there are big things, right? Like, we want to know the biblical truth. We want to be able to communicate it clearly. We want to be able to answer kids' hard questions, but also, you know, it's hard and it's easy at the same time. But I think being those people that are able to sit with kids and not be afraid of them and treat them like real people that are loved by God, just like we are, is transformative, just like it has been to us. And so it's hard, but it's also really easy. It's easy at the same time. So, but thanks so much.
Thanks for being here.
Oh, my pleasure. It's a lot of fun. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for joining us today. If you enjoyed this conversation, please like and subscribe, leave a review, tell your friends, and join us on all of our social media channels. Thanks again, and God bless you.